That is, but I wish that Martha Graham had choreographed that. I would love to see it dance to that music. In a wild, it sounds like way too much music for just two musicians, but I suspect it really is just one piano player and one percussionist. Is that true, Joe?
We're listening to the opening of the Stampede from my favorite American concerto, an American masterpiece, the Lou Harrison Piano Concerto from 1985. You're hearing our principal percussionist, Bill Richards, and Ben Pasternak at the piano, conducted by Angel. But there's an orchestra there, which eventually joins the Stampede.
Mm-hmm. What was he playing? A series of toms?
Toms.
Different pitch toms, I mean, which are not pitched the same way a timpani is pitched, but you really can hear them go up and down. They're fun.
Exactly. But, you know, you capture completely the character of the piece, because this is a dance piece, actually. Mm-hmm. I learned through Bill Albers that Harrison, the inspiration was a medieval dance called Stampede.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're talking about the 13th century.
Right.
So Stampede has to do with the feet.
Right.
So they were stamping the feet.
It's a stamping dance, absolutely.
It's a stamping dance. But on the other hand, I feel the fact that the tom-toms are next to the piano. Mm-hmm. Because I feel this is an Indian raga too. So it's a percussionist accompanying a soloist. And actually the word tom-tom, mm-hmm, it's an Indian word. It's an Indian drum.
I see.
So I see
like
both,
tabla,
and I would like also Bill Albers to talk about this. But I feel that there is this Indian influence there that in the end brings to flamenco.
Huh.
To me, it sounds like flamenco. It's a 3/8, but the emiolias, mm-hmm, that we are perceiving all the time are clearly flamenco dance. So the stamping of feet with this emiolias in the rhythm, even the melodic part, sounds totally to Andalusia. As you know, flamenco, one of the roots is the Roma, mm-hmm, peoples, gypsy, that come from India, mm-hmm, and establish themselves in the south of Spain. To me, it's an extraordinary mixture of things that makes the piece incredibly exciting.
Angel Hierro Ordóñez, I've often thought of you as a world traveler, and indeed you are, but that little 15 seconds, you just took us from Southeast Asia to Andalusia and now onto Bali with the music of Lou Harrison. You tune back into this wild mayhem, which we give under the name Post Classical Ensemble. The principal mayhem inventor is Joe Horowitz. I'm sitting here with Angel Hierro Ordóñez. Joe, defend yourself. What are we doing here?
I can't even begin to talk about my enthusiasm. I can't adequately describe my advocacy for this piece. I truly believe it is the single outstanding concerto by any American composer. I think it's an American masterpiece. And I think we are very far from realizing the full stature of Lou Harrison as a 20th century master. He is one of the three composers we most perform. The other two are Silvestre Revueltas and Bernard Herrmann. These are all acts of advocacy. on behalf of composers whose time will come.
This is a piano concerto, Lou Harrison. When was it written, do you know?
1985.
Wow. See, I knew Lou Harrison for a while, and I did some of his work. Always a lovable man, lovable character. He had his own gamelan there in the town of Santa Cruz. I used to hear them play it all because my son went to school there. But this piece, I don't know this kind
you
of
invention.
You
can't even begin
invention.
To imagine the magnitude of this piece because the other three movements are not at all like the Stampede.
Exactly.
Harrison is such a master of fusion. He never feels eclectic, but he enfolds a multitude of musical worlds. There's a quote which I acquired from Bill Alvis from an interview that he did with me about Lou Harrison that I would like to read. It's very short. In his book, The Music Primer, Lou points out that drawing musical borders is an artificial process, that really music changes by degree as one crosses geographical borders around the world. I think that is a definitive statement about the appropriative panache of Lou Harrison. And in this concerto, which we will hear in a wonderful live performance, you can hear certainly the influence of Brahms, I would say, the influence of India, the influence of Java. Angel hears the influence of Andalusia. It traverses many worlds, yet it is all wonderfully of a piece.
You know, I studied with this genial conductor, Sergio Celibidache.
Oh, yeah.
And he always said something that when somebody from a different culture recognizes himself in that other culture, is that the best sign for authenticity? So even if the music by Harrison has nothing to do with flamenco, his idea, just the fact that I recognize my culture within that music means that this is so authentic. And I think that's probably what is happening here. Maybe it has nothing to do with Andalusia in his mind. To me, it sounds totally flamenco.
You know, I'm loving it. And I kind of get this image of Merlin taking young King Arthur up into the air with him, flying around. I said, what do you see? He said, I don't know. He said, well, do you see where the boundaries are between Cornwall and the next country? There are no boundaries. That's what he's saying. And that's what Lou Harrison lived.
Yeah, one could also say, one could say so many things about him, that he was an apostle of world music before we had a name for it. He's not only a finished composer, he's a prophetic composer.
Yeah.
And if you group him with a maverick like Henry Cowell, who taught him, or John Cage, who was his buddy, you have to then, as a postscript, say what may be unsayable, which is he's a real composer. He's not just an inventor.
Hmm. And as Joe said, this concerto is very romantic. On the other hand, the other movements, I mean, the beginning, the first movement, this is very American, in my opinion, the first movement. This vastness of the immensity of the American period, it reminds me a little bit the soundtracks we recorded from Virgil Thompson and Copland, you know, this New Deal documentaries that would show the American period or the river, you know, those immensities. Very, very romantic. It's true.
And yet the piano writing is governed by a layering of texture, which he acquires from the model of Javanese gamelan.
True.
And when we performed this at the cathedral, we preceded our performance with a five-minute film in which Bill Alvis demonstrated how the layering of gamelan becomes a layered piano texture in the Harrison. And as the pianist in this demonstration, I was amazed to discover under my fingers how idiomatically and creatively Harrison composes for piano. So we don't have the video, but it's enough to just have the audio for this five-minute demonstration.
You say the piece was written in 1985. I wonder for whom, which pianist, he was making this piece, Lou Harrison.
Well, that's an appropriate question because it has a very interesting and illuminating answer. It was composed for Keith Jarrett.
Uh-huh.
And Jarrett made a recording, which, alas, is a very misleading document because Jarrett has a very distinctive piano style. You'll find in the performance that we're hearing today with Benjamin Pasternak a very different take on the music, and I find it more fulfilling in exploring the multiplicity of musical worlds, some of which are classical and even Brahmsian, which Harrison embraces. This music has not enjoyed anything like the advocacy that it deserves.
Trying to think of the American pieces that do get played a lot. Barber Concerto, for example, some of these other pieces.
Don't get me started. I mean, to me, the only American piano concerto that you can mention in the same breath is the Gershwin Concerto. Not that it's similar, but, you know, it's music of world importance.
But, you know, I'm just trying to think, why do so many people want to play the concerto by Barber? Why do they want to play the concerto of Gershwin? First of all, for the pianist, it's fun to play. It's very challenging, both of those pieces, but it's fun to play. I'm sorry, that's going to last more than a lot of things. If the performers love it, it will stick around.
Yep.
They will teach the audiences to love it with them, I think. So we need some more people to play this Pasternak. Where's he come from? He's playing American music like this.
Ben studied with Hershovsky and Serkin at Curtis.
Pasternak is a famous name. Is he related?
No.
He's not the author's son or grandson.
He's American born.
I see. So he comes out of a pretty traditional training at Curtis Institute. That's sort of
completely middle. Traditional.
Yeah. You know. And he can play this wonderful rhythmic stuff we just heard. I want to hear the piece now. Before we get to that, you mentioned Bill Alves. We have him on the phone with us right now from California. He's one of the great experts on Lou Harrison and on gamelan music. We just heard his wonderful toccata on the first half of this program. You said that at the performance you gave in Washington, he gave you a demonstration. What did he show?
As you'll discover, Bill uses a Javanese gamelan to show how the texturing of the piano writing in the Harrison Piano Concerto derives directly from gamelan practice.
I'd love to hear that hear the Harrison.
So we can hear that clip right now.
Lou Harrison loved and played gamelan for years before composing his piano concerto. In this work, he ingeniously reconciles elements of both European and Javanese tradition, merging the structural forms of Beethoven and Brahms with the flowing contemplative patterns of Javanese gamelan. As in gamelan music, a core melody forms the backbone of the concerto's first movement. Here it is by itself, just in the piano part. Low notes in the piano part take on the structural function of the Javanese gongs. The piano then interweaves more intricate figuration based on the same principles as the bonang instruments of the Javanese gamelan. Harrison invites us to experience all these different levels of melodic flow simultaneously. For the Javanese, this texture is a reflection of the cosmic hierarchy in sound.
So that's a taste of the piano writing, which I think is unique in this first movement, which we're about to hear.
We should also mention, and I think Bill Alves also can help us here too, the special tuning of the piano. Mm-hmm. And by consequence, the harps and the rest of the orchestra has to adjust. Bill, can you tell us a little bit about the special tuning for the piano?
Lou, for much of his career, was fascinated with the acoustics of natural string and wind instruments, and wrote much of his music using not the kind of standard 12-tone tuning that we find on piano, but adjusted to match the overtones and the acoustics of these instruments. In this piece, and maybe, Bill, this is one reason why it's not a piece that's performed
exactly
that much. It's another obstacle to its popularity, perhaps, but it gives the music such a depth and resonance yep. that it wouldn't otherwise have.
So give me an example. You've got a clarinet or a horn. How do you just play a note, that F, a little bit sharper than you normally would?
The scoring is only trombones, harps, percussion, yep. and
strings.
Well,
the trombone is very easy because it's got a slide. Exactly. You can put it anywhere you want. Yep. The same is true of strings, but the harp is not. You've got to like kind of tune a string, and it's not going to move. So where do you
That's
tune
right.
it? If you play
That's
an
right.
F on the harp, do you play the F a little sharper or a little lower? How?
Lou asked the harpist to retune their instruments yep. to match the piano
exactly.
and leaves out some instruments that would have a hard time doing that, like the clarinet, is mm-hmm. not in this concerto.
Exactly.
So that's why he calls it Concerto for Piano and Selected Orchestra.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm still wondering, so how's the piano tuned? Because the other instruments are going to match to it.
It's tuned frequently.
During the performance?
No, in the days leading up to the...
Oh, okay. How do you take a piano that's tuned, say, at normal 440 or whatever it is, standard pitch? What would you have to do to that piano to make it play this piece?
You use a skilled piano technician.
But what do you do to a string? Do you do play it higher, lower?
Yeah. It built what is called the Kirchenberg tuning, isn't it, Bill?
Yes, Kirchenberger's second tuning. Kirchenberger was a 18th century composer and student of Bach's who first talked about this tuning in the 18th century. Lou loved it because it has... on the white keys, certain relationships that relate to these acoustics, and a separate kind of series on the black keys. And that means that certain intervals are much more dissonant.
Yep.
And he uses that dissonance very strategically in the concerto. It's both an incredible consonance and dissonance that is just unavailable on the conventional piano.
Yep.
So instead of the well-tempered clavier, we got the ill-tempered or the bad-tempered clavier.
So all of these factors play a role in the music we're about to hear, the first movement of the Harrison Piano Concerto. The wonderful music critic for the American scholar, Sudip Boza, hears this first movement as a canyon. And you've already heard that Angel hears it as an evocation of the American West. Open space. I'll just add one more ingredient, which is this is a sonata form, and it works, but it works without directional harmony.
Which is the essence of sonata form to begin with. You can start a pitch, you move to another pitch, and then you got to come back. That's the recap. Here, there's none of that tension, nor none of that release.
He has to use other means to achieve trajectory. And here it is, movement one of the Lou Harrison Piano Concerto.
Thank you. the ending is very, very tonal. In fact, there he gets back to a major triad. He found his way home.
It's a tonal piece.
Remarkable piece from Lou Harrison. First movement of his piano concerto. This was Pasternak is the man's name, but what's his first name?
Benjamin.
Benjamin Pasternak, wonderful performer. And Angel, you were doing a great job with your post-classical ensemble. What's that music like for a conductor?
It's very special. As Joe says, this is, to me, has been a revelation, this concerto. I like very much working with sound. This is what I really like. And this is the kind of pieces that really attracts me because, I mean, just the instrumentation with the three trombones and the harps. We didn't hear one of the parts in which the harps participated, but it's so beautiful. The texture, the structures is really fascinating. Yeah.
It's interesting the way the piece starts. Very broad, sort of not quite angry. Recalls for me like some like Opus 111 or Hammerklavier, that kind of very dramatic opening from Beethoven. And then very quickly, it dissolves to much more gentle music where the strings are playing. And that sounded like the American Prairie to me. I agree with you.
But I think breadth is a keynote of this entire movement.
Ooh.
Not something you would say about the second movement or the fourth movement. But
well, let's hear some more of this.
So the second movement is the Stampede, which we already sampled. The clusters that you hear are an octave bar that precisely covers an octave.
I don't know what it is. Octave bar?
It's a piece of wood which spans an octave, and you hold it in your right hand and you use it.
So do you bring out all of the keys then?
Exactly.
So it's like a cluster.
Yeah, it's like an octave cluster. Yeah. So Bill, the Stampede is his version of a scherzo. It's ABA. There's a middle section you could call a trio. The recap is compressed. It's unlike anything else in the concerto literature. We sampled it before at the top of the second half.
Right. There's a piece I thought Martha Graham should choreograph.
And of course, there was a famous choreography by Mark Morris of another Lou Harrison piece, the Grand Duo for Violin and Piano. His music is very danceable, and Harrison was certainly a devotee of dance. Here is the Stampede, movement two of the Lou Harrison Piano Concerto. Thank you.
virtuoso tom-tom playing for one thing. Spectacular piece. Second movement, kind of elongated scherzo of Lou Harrison's piano concerto.
You know, Bill, how in certain Schubert movements they keep going when you think they should stop? Like the finale of the C minor piano sonata, which is a perpetual motion. This has that quality. Yeah. It just keeps going. It's an impersonal dimension of this fabulous and unforgettable stampede, which is the second movement. But my favorite moment, Angel, in this concerto is the opening of the third movement, which I feel is the moment where the full magnitude and amplitude of this concerto sinks in. When you hear the beginning of the third movement, suddenly the vastness of the entire design becomes apparent. And we'll hear it with the fourth movement, which is like a coda. It's a very short movement that's based on an Indian genre called Jala.
What's that mean? I know Java. What's Jala?
Bill, Elvis?
In the kind of finale of North Indian raga performances, it's frequent for sitar or other string players to play drone notes in between the melody notes.
Yep.
It creates this very exciting, propulsive rhythm.
Exactly.
That's what we hear Lou borrowing.
And that's Jala. I just learned something new.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Angel, what would you like to tell us about movements 3 and 4 of the Harrison Piano Concerto?
Movement 3, we are going back to romantics here. Besides a Brahmsian sound, I feel a lot of Debussy here too. It's a lot of the French influence of resonances, the colors. And there is a beautiful Bartok moment in the piece too, which is a beautiful moment in which B natural in the first violin against the B flat of the second. It's sublime. It's really sublime. You know, after having conducted this piece in the cathedral, I can see the other movements being performed in any other place, but this movement needs really the resonance of the cathedral. It's inimaginable for me right now in a non-reverberant place as the cathedral was.
I'm all ears. Let's listen. This will be the third and fourth movements and the conclusion of Lou Harrison's Piano Concerto.
Thank you.
Well, after that big, wonderful piano concerto, we have time for just a little sample of another piece from Lou Harrison. Not the whole piece, but a movement or two. What are you going to play?
So we've been sampling a three-hour concert, and the penultimate piece was the Suite for Violin, Piano, and Small Orchestra by Lou Harrison, composed in 1951, which is before he became a scholarly expert in gamelan, and yet two of the movements are called First Gamelan and Second Gamelan. Mm-hmm. So obviously this is a more superficial acquisition of gamelan than what we observed in the concerto. We'll just hear the last two movements, the Second Gamelan and the chorale. I know from Bill Alvis, who we'll hear from in a second, that in the period of time that Harrison composed this piece, he was engaged in Christian mysticism, and that's certainly more than apparent. Bill, what would you like to tell us about this suite or the last two movements of the suite?
In the 1930s and 40s, Lou had read journal articles by Colin McPhee, you remember the composer, scholar of Balinese music, in which he outlined the characteristics of that style before his book on the subject. The Second Gamelan movement is based on those principles and tries to approximate the kind of scale that was used. It's a pentatonic piece and imitates the kind of gamelan that was used for shadow puppet plays in Bali.
And the chorale?
The origins of the piece are when Mauro and Anahid Amjimian, pianist and violinist, friends of his, invited him to provide a piece for their Carnegie Hall concert. And he had forgotten all about it when it was coming up. And so he pulled out sketches that he had made of a cantata based on the mystical Christian writings of Simone Weil and others. And so the chorale reflects that kind of transcendence that was on his mind at the time.
Angel, can you tell us something about the instrumentation of this piece?
Yeah, this is, you know, again, back about the fascinating instrumentation that Harrison always uses. This is a small group, two flutes, one of them doubles a piccolo in a very short moment. We have an oboe, we have a harp, we have two celli, one double bass, and what is actually, he introduces something very, very special, which makes the piece very exciting, which is a tack piano, which is a piano that is prepared with nails on the, how do you call that?
Hammers.
The hammers, exactly. Yeah. And it produces a very punchy and very thin sound that actually matches beautifully with the celesta, which is the other instrument that completes the group. It's an extraordinary combination of sounds that he achieves.
Yes, he combines a tack piano with a celesta. So there are three keyboards here, counting the piano. We'll now hear the last two movements of Lou Harrison's Suite for Violin, Piano, and Small Orchestra. Thank you.
Nice to hear that again after all those years. We used to do that with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. Suite for violin and piano and small orchestra. Music of Lou Harrison, early piece, relatively, in his gamelan area, 1951 or so. Tell us who the performers were.
We had our concertmaster, Natty Drayblade, and the pianist was Wan Chi-Soon, who actually was one of the pianists in the first half of the performance.
Ah, fantastic. So, Joe, how did you put together this concert at the National Cathedral?
This concert, Bill, was the culmination of maybe half a dozen years of programming around the theme of gamelan and its influence on Western composers. All of that programming was undertaken in collaboration with the Indonesian embassy in D.C., and we enjoyed the wonderful support of the now outgoing Indonesian ambassador, Budi Bowo Laksono, who's actually recorded for us a tribute, which we're going to hear right now.
I applaud the post-classical ensemble for their commitment in promoting classical music and working very, very hard to release new Lou Harrison CD under Nexus. Not only the CD release coincides with Harrison centenary celebrations, but it also plays an important role in promoting a better understanding for Indonesians and Americans through cultural diplomacy. In March 2016, we hosted a PCE concert at the embassy celebrating work of Lou Harrison that incorporates Japanese gamelan as an important element in his music. And we are delighted to once again host Lou Harrison's centenary celebrations on April 24th. I believe music is a universal language that can unite people regardless of their background. Indonesian music is rich in cultures, heavily influenced by varieties of sounds and rhythms. In its own terms, Indonesian music is also a reflection of East meets West, as we have 350 ethnicities from more than 17,000 islands that stretch out from the most western part to the most eastern part of Indonesia. Lou Harrison has proved this notion through his music that connects people from the East and the West and made a wonderful for collaborations that eventually enrich each other's cultures. It is my honor as the Indonesian ambassador to the United States to always promote music and cultural diplomacy that bind the ties between the two nations. Again, big congratulations to Post Classical Ensemble.
So that was the outgoing ambassador of Indonesia to the United States, our great friend, Budi Bowo Laksono, with a pertinent observation about cultural fusion, cultural fluidity, the humanizing impact of music as an instrument for mutual understanding, which we happened to be talking about 3 hours ago, just before we went on the air.
Yeah, Joe, you and I, and how we're living in interesting times here in America, interesting times across the world when you look at the situation in Europe, in England, in France, in Germany. Those were words to listen to and enjoy. Thank you for joining us today. You've been listening to Post Classical Ensemble, and I'm here in the studio in New York with Joseph Horowitz and Angel Gil Ordóñez. And bringing something special into us, calling in all the way from his post at the university there in California, was Bill Alves. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Bill McLaughlin. Post Classical is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org.
I want to thank you for tuning in to Post Classical this evening. We want to thank our recording engineer in New York, Bill Zygmunt of Digital Island Studios. Check them out at digital-island-studios.com. The next post-classical comes your way June 1st at 8 p.m. And yes, that's a Saturday night because we will be coming to you live from the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. in a very special program honoring the 200th anniversary of the birth of the great American poet Walt Whitman. The concert will feature the rare performance of a radio play titled Whitman by Bernard Herrmann. You want to mark your calendars for a live broadcast of Post Classical coming to you from the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. on June 1st. Post Classical is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org.